f***ing car.
Hey, just get off the f***ing car. Hey, suck. Get your slippery ass off the car. Listen to me. Get off the f***ing car with your f***ing ass.
Shut that f***ing mouth or I'll come over there and f***ing start her head.
Mimic.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to FilmSack. It's probably not morning where you are. I'm Scott Johnson, and this is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 391. I'm joined today by Brian. I'm dying, Joe Dunaway.
I'm dying. Really, I'm out. Oh, hi. I want to be alone. Oh, hi. This week on The Way of the Sack, I learned some brand new lore. New to me, the lore of the Bagman. Specifically, James the Leprechaun Khan. Yep, Leprechaun. Yeah, he's got bags of monies, and I'll be damned if you can have them. He's a flat-out trickster, that Leprechaun Khan. Khan luring you into his wishing well of broken bottles and shattered dreams. There is cheese in that there trap, as best as I can tell from what Del Toro was mumbling about. The cheese of death and whining. Oh, I got glass in my arm. Whatever. Anywho, best be on your guard, because even if you are lucky enough to get close to the Leprechaun Khan's monies, you will surely have to fight his league of extraordinarily old men's. They ain't much, but they're all survivors. Well, at least for the next 15 minutes or so. Khan! You clever girl. Don't you walk away from me with your monies and your stiff neck. Pac-Man.
Man, that was all over the place.
You could bottle that.
Yeah. Sell it at the Whole Foods.
Yes.
Also with us, Randy, the Way of the Gum, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy. I'm here to talk about the art of the simplification philosophy, such as a plan is just a list of things that don't happen, or karma's only justice without the satisfaction. How about $15 million isn't money, it's a motive with a universal adapter on it. Simplification philosophies are my favorite. So I decided to find some for other movies that we all know well. The Last Jedi is just a privilege trigger with some porgs in it. Mad Max Fury Road is just a music video without the little words on the bottom of the right corner of the screen. Remember those? Those were cool.
Yeah, they're great.
Top Gun is Iron Eagle with only white people. The Wolf of Wall Street. The Wolf of Wall Street is just Wall Street with a wolf added. But the wolf is actually a rich guy on drugs and not an actual wolf. Dances with Wolves is an actual wolf movie with a wolf and everything.
Very nice.
Okay, so you at the end thing, something clever.
There you go.
Yeah, something clever. Clever, Randy.
Hey, is it my memory right that in Wolf of Wall Street, he snorted cocaine out of somebody's butt? Do I have that memory right?
That's exactly what happened.
Okay.
Jonah Hill did, right? Or was it
It may have been DiCaprio is what I'll call him now. Right.
The really memorable thing about that movie is him recalling in his mind getting in a car and driving somewhere.
Yeah.
While he's so completely wasted that you get to also see what he really did.
Yeah.
Like,
That
movie.
That scene is just so classic. But the movie itself is kind of useless.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember from that movie is Matthew McConaughey on. Sort of pseudo Native American.
I forgot he did that. Yeah, and he was all skinny because he was doing Dallas Buyers Club at the same time. All right, sorry.
Was pretty convinced that Randy was going to do his job for this week, which was semen collector questionnaire guy.
Oh Lord,
that was a little bit. I enjoyed what you did instead.
Did I
ever tell you about the time I ran a shitty motel in Mexico?
No, but I can't wait to hear. Okay, finally, also with us, Brian, barefoot and very pregnant, Ibbot.
Ooh, that's right.
Hi, Despacito Hotel. Yes, this is Keith from Yelp.com. Do you have a few minutes? Great. I'd like to go over some of the recent reviews that people have been leaving on Yelp here and see if they make sense to you because they threw a couple red flags here at corporate. Ready? Okay, great. First off, we have a one-star review from a Cheryl H. from Wilmington, North Carolina, who says, bed very soft and nice view, but crazy bleeding pregnant lady wandering the halls. Does this make sense to you? Oh, okay. One-time incident? Okay, great. All right, let's move on. This next one is from a Parker J. from South Bend, Indiana. It says, I only got one washcloth, and my room has a horizontal line of equally spaced half-dollar-sized holes that go around the entire perimeter. Second-floor ice machine doesn't work and had to go to first floor to get ice. How about that one? Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, more washcloths? No, I totally understand. I was asking more about the row of bullet holes. Oh, that room's getting renovated? Okay, great. All right. I got one last one here. This last one is from Terry V. from Fresno, who says, had to go to front desk twice to get a key card from my door and fountain in courtyard filled with thousands of shards of broken glass. Also, stairwell light buzzes a little, and I can hear it from my room. What about that one? Yeah, no, I mean the shards of glass. Ah, okay. Would you say you have a plethora of shards of broken glass?
Oh, my God.
Muy bien. Nice.
Oh, my God. Tell me. Cheryl.
All right, that was great.
What is a plethora?
Oh, so good. Nice reference. All right, you guys. It's the way of the gun. I'm bummed about this movie. It sucks. It's not a good movie. It's not a good movie, and it's got some things.
You're not wrong about it not being a good movie. What do you feel like about saying it's a good series of events?
It's a good third. It's a good third of a movie.
Yeah,
I would say.
Yeah. The final scene, final bits are pretty exciting. I'm gonna go on record now, early in the show, and say I loved, not just liked, but loved the soundtrack. It was incredible.
Oh,
I thought
the soundtrack was amazing.
Yeah, it was way above it. The movie
it's weight class.
Yes, thank you. The movie was punching down. That soundtrack was punching way up, and it's awesome. Like really well made. And I don't know who did it. I didn't bother to go look it all up.
I love how he would just creep it in certain scenes. You would be like, you almost wouldn't hear it at first. And it would just escalate the whole emotion of the scene, how it would come in.
Yeah.
It saved a lot of scenes for me, the music did.
It really did for me as well. It was punctuated stuff that needed it. Yes, Randy, sorry.
It was scored by Joe Kramer, who is known for being, I hate to say this, I guess he's not listening, known for being inexpensive.
Oh. Yeah, he's a TV guy, right?
Well, he is a TV guy. But because of this, I think because of this movie, he also has gotten to do things like, you know, Jack Reacher and the second to last Mission Impossible film, Rogue Nation.
Oh, Rogue Nation. He did the last two. So Rogue Nation and the new one is him as well.
He actually won an award for that. He won the World Soundtrack Awards and the International Film Music Critics Award for Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Yeah, his music is so obviously he's still working with Christopher McQuarrie is the thing, because he's the director and the writer here, and so he's great, man. That is not something I expected in a movie that is otherwise pretty freaking mediocre in every other description.
And from his IMDb photo, he looks like he wants to sell you a Barco lounger.
Yeah, a little bit.
I want to disagree that the movie is mediocre. I want to state that there are about four or five moments in the movie where I'm like, this is a damn good movie. And there's about 10 to 15 moments in the movie where I'm like, okay, this sucks.
I mean, I don't think anybody's arguing that this movie has flashes of maybe not brilliance, but flashes
flashes of brilliance. I mean, because it almost made me sad to be at such a pinnacle sometimes where it's like everything was hitting. It's like, oh, look, they're slowly panning back. And the cinematographer knows what he's doing because he's isolated this one set of actors over here on the right-hand side. And it's blocked off these huge blocks of white space. And as he pans back, we reveal that we have a listener and we're forwarding the story. And for just a few moments, it's like, wow, this thing is hitting on all cylinders. And then the very next scene, I'm like, what the hell? What just happened?
Then, Then they let Juliette Lewis look at straight at the camera with her mouth open.
Yeah, she's an interesting casting in this because I like her generally speaking. I really enjoy most of her movies.
Did you prefer her 8 months pregnant or her Jiffy Pop pregnant? Because sometimes she would go from being oh that looks normal Jiffy to Pop. Oh my god, what do they stuff in there?
Jiffy Pop pregnant. I've never heard that.
That must have something to do with lighting and how cameras make you look.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that was the same prosthesis
right
throughout the whole film. There's no way. Absolutely no way. Yeah. That thing got huge in some scenes.
Huge.
And it must be that someone was looking through a camera going, oh wow, she doesn't look like she has a big enough belly now.
Bring in the body
pillow.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Who's got a seat cushion in their car? Yeah, bring that in.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, we haven't even mentioned Ryan Phillip or Del Toro because both those guys are amazing, and so is Taye Diggs.
Hold on. Back up. I think that Del Toro is amazing. I'm not sure I'm on board with Ryan Phillippe.
I think Ryan Phillip was doing some interesting things that failed.
And I think we better say Ryan Phillippe or Phillippe.
Oh, yeah, Phillippe. However you say it. I don't care.
He says Ryan Phillippe. The thing with him is, did you watch him in a bunch of crappy teenage movies before this?
Yes.
In this case, you have to decide, is he doing the best work of his life here? Or, because he might be. This might be his peak.
Yeah. Right? Maybe. I mean, what's he doing now? Has anyone followed his business lately? I have no idea what he's doing. I don't know.
He's on something called Shooter, a TV show called Shooter.
Oh, that's based on
the Gun Part 2?
Well, no, it's based on the Shooter movie with Marky Mark in it, I think.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
It's like a TV version of that. I don't think he's the main dude, though. Maybe he is.
But Bobby Lee Swagger.
Yeah, that's the guy.
About every three years, he makes a TV series. So like that Shooter, 3 years ago it was Secrets and Lies, that went 10 episodes. 3 years before that it was Damages, that went 10 episodes. Mm-hmm. Like apparently he takes 2 years off and then comes back and we're going to make it big on TV. And no, you're not, Ryan Phillippe.
Well, he's affecting Ryan an accent Phillippe. Here that just rubs me the wrong way.
It just feels right. I was thinking the same thing, that his delivery just feels like there's some, like they said, all right, here, watch all these old gangster films. Try and do that accent. And he couldn't do that accent.
Yeah.
But he bought full in, though, even though it was always consistently overdone. He never kind of backed off of it.
No, you're right.
Yeah. But is that a thing to commend? I mean, I'll stop doing that thing.
Yeah.
If you consider, I always respect commitment over adjustment. So if I would rather you go commit all the way through and just make an absolute ass of yourself than to flounder. Don't flounder. Yeah. If you're going to give it to me, commit. And he committed. Yeah,
I feel like the whole movie overcommits to what it's referencing.
Mm. Right.
So it's obviously an homage to Sam Peckinpah. The characters are literally named Parker and Longbaugh, so they're straight out of Butch Cassidy.
Yeah, that's their last names, the real last names of those guys, right?
Right.
Okay.
That's what they call each other.
Yeah.
It's like there's a point where I'm like, okay. And now we're going to have a Mexican standoff later. Which, by the way, was filmed in Skull Valley, Utah. Scott, you ever get out there?
Yeah, it's beautiful out there. The part. So at the top of the movie, they show the whole bunch of stuff that looked like right around Moab and maybe Zion. I couldn't tell for sure. But they clearly were filming a bunch of stuff here. And then when they did that stuff at the end, I went, oh, well, they kind of like stayed out here and. Mm-hmm. Like really went for it.
Salt Lake City is listed as so I mentioned the semen acquisition semen location.
Bank. Yeah, semen bank is, the semen bank must be a Salt Lake semen bank, or they faked it to look like something else. I don't know, but I know we have those
Sarah
here.
Sarah Silverman Memorial Alley is probably somewhere in Salt Lake City.
Yeah,
I've never been to a semen bank, but man, I was not comfortable with that. Line of questioning, man. That's a lot of questioning.
I don't understand what that scene did to advance the film.
Nothing.
It felt like it was written like a sort of like dark comedy sketch. Right. Then it was like, well, I just got to shove this in here and let like it gives us their acting a little bit, but it doesn't. I don't know. It just
were we all trying to be Tarantino then?
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Yep, like it's a lot like that. The banter, the Tarantino style banter that doesn't serve a purpose of moving the story forward. Just gives you.
It's supposed to. Exactly. It's supposed to develop the character, but did it? Not really.
No, not really.
And of course, this was also an attempt to be David Mamet a lot.
Sure.
Like he's influenced by David Mamet, no doubt. And it actually made me question whether Tarantino lists Mamet as one of his references. Like,
right.
This is really a lot of that.
They try, none of it feels like it. Only feels in David Mamet or a David Mamet-ish in attempt, but not in success.
For sure.
It's just like not
the
good.
The thing that happens over and over and over here is that the two men usually are paired up and they have really similar philosophies but slightly different experiences,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And like that sperm bank is one of them. Obviously, the scene where both Del Toro and James Caan come together and sit in a crappy diner and talk was so David Mamet.
Yeah.
And it's like even the bodyguards, like here we have two bodyguards and two other bodyguards, but we just kill them off screen, so we never actually meet them. And it's like he loves pairing things up so much that it actually gets a little sad and tired.
Yeah. It got in the way a little bit, to be sure. I don't know. I wanted to like this because I've been on a Christopher McQuarrie kick lately. I think his latest entries into that Mission Impossible thing have been awesome. Like really great action movies. Some of the best practical effects I'd ever seen.
Did anybody see The Mummy last year?
No, that was poop.
I did see it.
Did he direct it or just wrote?
What just happened? Why are we introducing Universal Monsters? Get out of here.
He write that or direct it? I can't remember what he did. He did something.
He wrote it.
Okay. Yeah, that thing's pretty universally panned, isn't it? Nobody liked that thing.
It had its moments. But Christopher McQuarrie was having, according to the trivia, I didn't watch the director's cut or nothing like that, or The Way of the Gun, watched on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
But he was actually struggling when he was making this movie. And he kind of had some things. He wanted his own vision to come through and to shine through, but the studios weren't having it, weren't getting what he wanted. And ended up having to end up not wanting in the beginning Ryan Phillippe, but he took him, and so there's this little bit of you can feel it. There's a little bit of I want to do what I want to do, but y'all won't let me, and so here's the product.
I'm calling it now. Phillippe is what we're going to do from now on.
Phillippe?
That is what he says. He Phillippe, calls himself Ryan Phillippe.
He says Phillippe.
Which is fine. It's his name. He knows.
He puts the accent on the Phil, not on the lip. Phillippe.
Ryan Phil.
Phillippe.
Oh, that's amazing, you guys. I freaking love it. All right.
The real miracle of this film is that they let McQuarrie direct it, because up to this point, he was a pretty successful writer, but then he stopped getting any jobs for a while. And so like the story of this movie is he was literally homeless, like unemployed, that did not have a prospect, and decided to write a movie that no way anybody would accept as a major Hollywood film, and like puts all sorts of things in it to pick at the people that were picking at him.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow
this feels like a movie made by a homeless person. It really does. So
But then somehow they actually find money for it, $20 million for it, and they let him direct it. That's a miracle.
Yeah.
Well, they did, because he's coming off of Usual Suspects with Bryan Singer. But he's coming off at Del Toro. He James Caan, James Caan, you've got Del Toro. I can see why they'd throw money at it. And it's unfortunate that this wasn't step two to like a really big jump forward. I mean, his Mission Impossible stuff is great. I didn't see Valkyrie, so I can't.
Valkyrie's awesome. I love Valkyrie.
Yeah, and apparently, like, he and Tom Cruise have, I don't know, they have a secret love child or something, because now you can't separate these guys anymore.
No, they're clearly.
I imagine that Tom Cruise probably let Christopher McQuarrie stay in his place while he was homeless.
Yeah, right.
Nice. I feel like maybe the marketing could have pivoted this film into something profitable. I think if they had sold this in a more simple idea as maybe the bag man or something like that, because he was really the central piece.
Yeah, but it ended up
movie.
Don't you think they kind of wasted that? They kind of wasted that.
If they could have flipped that with a little bit of marketing, I think they could have made the money.
Mm. Brian Dunaway, did you see the spiritual sequel to this movie?
I did.
Hell or High Water?
Oh, okay, shut up. What? Don't besmirch the name of Hell or High Water.
I'm just saying, like, Hell or High Water is like, how long do we have to wait to make a much better version of this?
Right.
I mean, you're not wrong. I love that movie. Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
I
yeah.
love that movie. It's so good. You're making me want to just watch it now. Bye, guys. FilmSack. Well,
FilmSack.com. Because in every possible way, Hell or High Water has better casting. As much as I love parts of this movie, Hell or High Water has a better script.
Yeah.
Great casting.
I agree with the casting. I think the casting is
good. No, the casting's
good,
fine.
Except for Ryan. Ryan Phillippe is a question mark for me, but I think the Del Toro, Khan, both really good. I like Juliette Lewis.
Man, what a waste with Taye Diggs, though, man. They could have. I feel like they could have done more with him.
He wasn't in his groove yet. Like he didn't have the big star power that he would a few years later. Yeah. And this movie actually showed him acting pretty. I mean, he did a really good job.
The acting was good.
He has to be a brooding psychopath. Like he did a good job of it. And then of course, you know, like. It's 2 years later, he appears in Chicago, and you're like, oh, wow, he really gets my attention. And then
he's also a very, very handsome man. And I'll say one of the things that worked for the movie is his character for me. Mm-hmm. And part of it was his blank face business he would make when nobody would be making a blank face. Like when he got shot in the neck, pretty good scene. He just kind of moves away, sits down. He's clearly going to die, but he's not freaking out. He's not screaming. Right. He's got Taye Diggs' face on, and it was pretty good.
Good job. Got Taye Diggs' face on.
Yeah.
Taye Diggs' face.
Good job, by the way, by the story setting up my expectation of Dr. Alan Painter as being everybody's whipping boy, and in the end, being the one who turns around and takes action against Taye Diggs. So I didn't see that. That was a good misdirection.
Give me a trope alert.
Oh, wow,
yeah, absolutely.
I got that.
No, not everybody in the movie has to be either related to or having sex with everybody else. No, it doesn't have
It is a tangled web of lines drawn from this character to that character to this character here.
And it's like if you just undo one of them, I wouldn't have had this problem. But when Taye Diggs and Kristen Lehman start making out, I'm like, oh, them too? Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yeah, I like her.
I was fine without that. Who was Nikki Catt actually twin brothers with? I would like to know.
He's like a little island, a little floating off island.
He is.
Yeah.
Until he got pulled apart.
Oh, that sucks. I'm not related to or dating anybody in this film.
Yeah. I'm such an outsider. Hey, Jeffrey Lewis is my father.
You know what? You know what it is? It's that... Writers love, and this makes sense because this is just kind of a universal thing. You see it across movies, books, video games, like everything. The idea of family and familial conflict is a huge thing. And like at the end of the day, what do you care more about, your daughter or do you care about your freaking mob, whatever deal? Like that's
your boss. Yeah. Right.
It's not so much that it's not well-worn material. It's just not well executed here. I never felt very good about anybody's relationship. I never really went, oh man, I sure hope Juliette Lewis makes it. Like, I could care less about her in this. She kind of
I actually cared more about James Caan's character. By the way, does James Caan always look like a just somebody's pissed off dad?
Yep, totally.
Yes.
Did.
That's
totally.
It. That's all we got.
I mean, I just saw the Godfather movies, and he's much younger in those.
Oh yeah,
even
Sunday, right?
Yeah, Sunday even then, somehow he manages to look like a pissed off dad. It's hard to explain why that guy can do that.
No, this is peak James Caan right here. This is all he's got. This is him. Like it was like this character moves to New York City and starts up a children's books company, and now he's an elf.
I got a little confused actually because I was actually trying to tie in my original opening was tying in Jennifer Aniston Aniston with Leprechaun movie.
Wait, Aniston, the old medication old people use?
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah,
all right.
That's right, from Friends.
Yeah.
I was tying in. I was accidentally tying in. I was remembering incorrectly. I was thinking that James Caan was her father in Friends, but it's not. It's that other guy that I sometimes get confused.
Oh, James Caan. Wait, her dad and Friends.
Robert Gould?
No, Elliot Gould.
No, definitely not Robert Gould. I know him. That's Rachel's. That's
Rachel's dad. That's right.
Yeah, Rachel's dad. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Hold on, I know who it is. He was on the
Monica's dad.
Oh shite! I can't remember. Also,
I got it. So his name is Lieberman or Liebman. Excuse me.
Joel Lieberman. Right. Got it.
Ron. Yeah. Right. Yep. Ron Liebman is his name, and for some reason in my head, I always get those two confused, Caan and Liebman.
Caan Liebman.
I gotta look.
I always think of Jennifer Aniston's actual dad, who was on Days of Our Lives.
Victor Kiriakis.
Victor Kiriakis. Oh my gosh! I always need to remember that if I bring up that show, Ibbot immediately is with me. He's like, "Yep,
that's totally." That's the only soap opera I ever watched. But boy, did we watch the crap out of that
it was so big in college. Yeah. It was so big. Even people like us watched it. Okay. It was nuts.
So the movie
married to what's her face Bluth, Lucille Bluth.
Oh
right. That's right. Yeah. Walter.
Oh, they're really married?
They're really married in real life.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wonder if you wanted to go beat up Jeffrey Tambor when
he prior to Lucille Bluth, he was married to Alice.
Oh. From who
from Alice.
Up, nobody
from Bell's Diner.
Yeah, Alice from Alice.
Nobody would date Flo. Is what we're learning from this. Yes.
So the movie that I got all caught up on, the other movie that somehow is related to this one, is Dead Poets Society. Does anybody know why?
I don't know why. No. It's the kid. The doctor. No, he's the
Dr. Painter here.
That's who
is
it
the
is.
The fourth guy. When you watch Dead Poets Society, you will come away remembering Robert Sean Leonard, Ethan Hawke, and Josh Charles.
Yep.
And he's the other guy. Dylan Cussman is him.
You're right. He's the kind of nebbish, kind of nervous one. He was the one that wasn't sure about all this. Like every time they were going to go hide away and do their poetry, he'd get all like weird. And then I think he kind of turned later when Robin Williams' character got in trouble and this kid wouldn't he wouldn't stick with the plan, so that's why he annoyed me, because I hate that kid.
Yes, he because of the characters he's played, he's very, very annoying. And then he ends up getting attached to Tom Cruise and what's his name later also. Sorry. If you look up Dylan Cussman, he's in Jack Reacher, he's in The Mummy, which is kind of cool. Like I wonder what is keeping these guys all together and working together later in their careers.
Yeah, I don't know.
Christopher McQuarrie is apparently.
No, the answer is Scientology. I'm sorry.
Interesting. By the way, and not that we need to go down this rabbit hole too far, but is Christopher McQuarrie, since they're such buddies now, is he all up in the Scientology deal?
Question, Scott and I had a discussion a couple weeks ago, and it's like, we don't know now. Like, there was a bunch of film and documentaries and stuff recently, and we're like, and they all went underground. So like, it's really hard to find out in 2018, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can't just look up Christopher McQuarrie and it's like, oh, he's really into Scientology. He's you just don't know anymore. They've
cleaned the websites.
Right.
right. Scrubbed them clean.
It's unfortunate because I don't know why I care about this. I feel like I want to know. I don't know why I really want to know more, but I do.
Well, you know, speaking of going down rabbit holes.
Inquiring mind.
Yeah.
Right. Speaking of going down rabbit holes, what was the thing that grossed Scott out this week?
Oh, it was easy.
Oh.
And
I know, because it grossed me the crap out.
Going into Juliette Lewis's garage to get a baby?
Nope.
No, that didn't bother me at all. That was super easy.
Can I guess, please?
Yes.
Okay, let's let Randy guess.
Go.
Because I don't know why, but I just imagine Scott dry heaving when Ryan Phillippe jumps into that fountain and comes up with all his glass in his arm.
That was too practical and effecty.
Right. I'll tell you what it was for me. Mm. It was Chittick's wife sitting on that couch, shoving shrimp in her face. Tate Dix comes up, sucks his face to her face, and he's sucking shrimp breath. I couldn't do it.
Delicious.
That was bad.
All right.
Cocktail sauce.
Yeah. All right. You know what? Dunaway, congratulations. You did it. I even captured the sound. Yeah. So this is the sound of Taye Diggs making out with Blondie after she just ate some nasty thing. So here you go. Yeah. Here you go. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all just lip smacking.
It's a new ASMR video.
She's eating his lips like shrimp, man. Yeah. It's gross.
Well done, though. You nailed it. That's exactly my thing.
Oh man, I was shivering when I saw that thing.
Yeah, it was rough. It was not at all what I was interested in. It turns out I am not into that. I'm not into, let me eat something and then come here and let's have like full on get your freaking fat tongue in my mouth make out. Let's do it.
I think maybe shrimp is a little too close, especially like that kind of boiled shrimp is a little too close to human temperature and a little too flesh like, and then just imagine just all of a sudden getting that twinge of shrimp in your mouth like, taste that just
like a little like bleh. A remnant leg or something.
Yeah.
So here's some
those little tail scale things.
There's very little in the way of trivia for this movie, but I found a couple I think are interesting. Here's one. Ryan Phillippe, whatever it is.
Phil Hippie.
Accidentally punched Sarah Silverman in that scene.
Accidentally.
So,
quote.
He was supposed to miss her. He hit her. She got knocked out. And when she woke up, the way this is reported is he was standing over her almost in tears. The makeup department used fake blood, and the huge lump on her chin was a continuity bonus. Phillippe apologized for like a week. So there you go.
That scene, like we're gonna talk about scenes that were great, scenes that were horrible. Mm. That scene is riding the line between, and it goes to horrible right after the fight. She's coming out of it, and she's like, "Look at what they did to my face." And her idiot boyfriend says something like, "You've never been so more beautiful.
You're more beautiful than ever."
And it's like, they just ruined it. It was going just fine, and they ruined it.
Yeah.
You mean Sideshow Bob?
Was it Sideshow Bob or Carrot? I couldn't
D. Snyder.
Right. Yeah. What combo is that guy?
It's definitely not the guy you think is going to kick your butt. No. Okay. So that was already kind of weird.
It was super weird, dude. I forgot. Like, what,
No, he's the guy from Deadpool and everything. He's in everything. Yeah. Silicon Valley.
Yeah. He does a pretty good mean Harry.
What's his name?
Jerry Von Pinkle Hot. I don't know.
He's in Silicon Valley?
TJ Miller. TJ Miller.
No way. That's TJ Miller?
No.
He looks like a TJ Miller.
He just looks
like
him.
This is 20 years ago, poor man's TJ Miller.
Yeah. Yeah. TJ Miller was like 3.
Yeah. TJ Miller wasn't sure what his career was yet. Yeah. But I feel like
Ryan Phillippe. I feel like he's a real sincere kind of guy, and I want to believe that story. I really feel like he probably felt that emotion.
Was this the first time
we saw Sarah Silverman in a prominent role where she's playing the loudmouth, because that's kind of her stick, right?
Well, look at her IMDb credit.
I mean, she gets a lot of she gets
it's memorable, right?
Well, it's memorable.
Yeah.
But it's not like she's there to move the plot forward at all, and it's not like we see her other than...
I think it's a great setting to make you realize this movie is going to bend what you think is going to happen. So I thought it was very important for the mood direction.
What was their purpose in that parking lot outside the club? Just sitting there talking, and they just decided they were going to sit there at that thing? Or was it to... Right. To draw out the crowd to beat that guy, or to attempt to beat that guy up.
I'm assuming it was I was assuming that they were on a job, and this was the only part of the job, and we won't get the full story, and they never reveal it. That's what I was assuming.
Here's what I think happened. Our chick in the bucket this week is the plot line of that scene. because they never got followed through on. Like,
there was
why
no
are they
payoff
there?
Or anything. Like, oh, they were there for this other thing, and they just happened to sit on this guy's car.
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, they were there to get that guy.
Right.
And stuff went awry because they didn't count on his loudmouth, or as she is in the IMDb, raving bitch.
Yeah, she's raving
that
bitch.
That scene was way more interesting than the payoff.
Why is she called raving bitch in there? It's awful. That's a terrible credit.
I bet she had something to do with that. You know, like, what should we call your character? I don't know. How about Raving Bitch?
She might.
She likes to own that.
And what should we call your boyfriend? It's credited as Pussy Whipped. That's the name of the boyfriend.
Is P Whipped.
Is it really?
That's hilarious.
P Whipped.
But just to answer the original thing, this was not like a debut or anything like that. She was playing this one scene role in a lot of other movies before that. She was in There's Something About Mary. She had a substantial for her at the time role in The Bachelor. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah. I do remember that.
This was Chris O'Donnell, Renee Zellweger.
She was somebody's friend, right? It's always that role for her. She's somebody's best friend because she's goofy.
You know, so, like, and she had been taking any appearance in any episode of any TV show for years. She's actually a Star Trek connection for us later.
Mm-hmm. She's our only one, actually. I couldn't find any others. I thought there'd be more, but whatever.
That, which was, you know, that appearance in Voyager was before this. So, like, Sarah Silverman was definitely, like, in her element at this point in this role.
Yeah.
It's just, like, the whole scene was useless. Like, the sperm bank scene, it doesn't need to be in the movie. It doesn't advance anything. It doesn't tell us anything. It's like the writer-director had an idea and didn't want to have an idea and not use the idea.
Yeah,
right.
That's how it
felt. They didn't want to scrap anything. So, did we talk about the real life relationship between Jeffrey Lewis and Juliette Lewis?
No.
In this, and that's because
it's uncle or something, right?
That's her father, right?
Well, that's her Lewis, father. Okay,
yeah, Jeffrey Lewis was is Juliette Lewis's. Yeah, and he doesn't play the father in the film.
No,
he plays the friend.
He plays the guy who's dying.
Man.
I'm dying.
Okay, remember, by the way, some connection, some familial connection between them.
And the reason why I want to get there is I want to say that, oh my gosh, his scene where he is suicidal and he's you're like, what are you doing right now with the guns?
Laying out all the guns and a nice little ring on the
little
table.
Little pinwheel layout. And then he puts them all in the bag and he shakes it up. I'm like, what are you doing
that
right now?
That is meta. That is absolute meta Russian roulette.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. And, but the thing that I found myself chuckling when, because he's such a straight-faced kind of guy here and he's kind of goofy, but when he puts the gun up to his head and he looks over to the left, like what's going to get splattered. And then he puts his hand up like on his, just so he can like catch some of the splatter. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to happen.
I don't want to ruin the lamp. Yeah.
Right. That's not going to happen. But for some reason that just made me chuckle. And I just enjoyed just about every scene he was in, even to the point where
he's a really interesting dude, isn't he? Like,
yeah,
he really is.
Something about him. And you've seen him in, I didn't know he'd passed.
Yeah. He died about 3 years ago.
Oh, that's too bad. I like that guy. But you'd see him in everything. Like, here's a guest starring
spot
on some sitcom, and then here he is in the Maverick movie, and then here he is in a thousand other things. Yeah. Guy got around. Got some work in Hollywood.
Back in the 1980s, when I was a kid, I was taken to see a stage show starring Jeffrey Lewis and his partner, whose name I forget. It was called Celestial Navigations, and they would tour around and do this thing where they would they would recite these like short stories they had written, and there would be like light and music on the stage. It was called Celestial Navigations, and I remember it being like really entertaining.
Right,
and it's like one of those things, like it's not a movie, it's got this is like sometimes actors are so into something, you know, that they're willing to to go all out.
Love it.
I really enjoyed his character. You could really have pulled that character completely out of the film, and the film would have been story wise and plot wise would have been no different. But I would have missed it.
Do you know if they're in any? Ever done anything together since?
That's a good question.
I'm just curious if that was a thing that ever would happen again for them.
It, him and
his daughter
McAllister or
no,
or
no, no.
McQuarrie.
Juliet.
Yeah, daughter father
Jeffrey,
thing.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I wonder if that's
ever. That's a good though. Question. I'll take
I'm
a look.
Looking. I saw McAllister as one of his moving McAllister in 2007. I don't see anything else here that I recognize as something Juliette Lewis was in.
You think he was
Devil's Rejects?
I forgot about Devil's Rejects.
That was Rob Zombie, yeah.
Yeah. Weird freaking movie, dude.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen a Rob Zombie movie. I've seen plenty of videos. I didn't even see the Halloween, and I've seen all the other Halloweens, but I haven't seen that. And it's not that I don't like Rob Zombie. Mm-hmm. I just, it's just never worked out for me. I don't know.
He's never worked out for me.
Never worked out.
I love that.
Yeah, watching this, this never happened. It's just, I don't know.
I wonder, okay, so this just brings up a little subtopic. Sometimes we do these on the show and it's kind of fun. When you're a dad of a famous acting daughter, right? And then you go, and I just try to put myself in this position, but if you go then and see, like, Natural Born Killers.
Natural Born Killers, that's a great one.
Yeah,
that's one of our favorites.
So
of
if Jeffrey Lewis, or not Jeffrey, Jeffrey? Yeah,
yeah
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey. Yes.
Jeffrey Lewis goes to the movie theater, sits, plops down, and watches that movie with his daughter in it, which, you know, is a pretty intense thing to see.
Right.
What's that like?
Collide.
I just wonder what that's like, you know?
Right.
And I think you can't know what it's like because you haven't done a bunch of acting and that that whole like lifestyle where you turn yourself inside out in front of a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And like then when you go and watch other people do it, you're seeing through the surface and you're knowing that there were, you know, cameras and stuff all around them and what they were going through, you know?
Yeah,
you're able to probably say, okay, this is it. She's acting. She's doing a great job.
Right.
I could see that. It's the craft of it, and you just can't help but see the craft of it.
I like to think he sits kind of sideways and is looking at the screen, and he sees her, and then he kind of puts his hand up like he did in the movie.
Protecting his own. 10 kids he has, by the way. Julia Lewis, Liefeld Lewis, Peter Lewis, Brandy Lewis, Deidre Lewis, Miles, Matthew.
Crazy.
Jeez.
Why did y'all know that Eddie Murphy is expecting his 10th kid? I'm like, what?
Really?
When did Eddie Murphy have so many kids?
Well,
how did he have time? No wonder we haven't seen him do any movies. He's been too busy.
Right?
Yeah.
Jeez.
He's got a few things going on. So hold on a second. Jeffrey Lewis had that many kids. How, all same lady or all spread across different marriages?
Oh, different,
or?
Three spouses.
Three different.
He visited that sperm bank and so that's just that's nice. How that works.
He was the only contributor to that sperm bank.
Right.
That's right, but and only Jeffrey one of his daughters was,
come on in.
Was a stepdaughter by marriage, so nine of them were his actual spawn.
And by the way, the year was 2000. When someone says early in the movie, you know, you could go to the sperm bank and make $3,000, I laughed and laughed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't know the finances of that. I was assuming it was incorrect because I was thinking, wow, if you could make that much money, people would be doing it all the time.
Yeah. I guess this was a minute before everybody found out that dudes will do anything for money.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I'll bet you they don't even pay.
Why were they getting primed up in the lobby? That we actually never got any.
It was ridiculous. Right. The whole scene was ridiculous. It's like the counterpoint to the Jeffrey Lewis in the trailer scene. Like the Jeffrey Lewis in the trailer scene is like, wow, this is amazing. Every part of this is amazing. The sperm bank scene is like, okay, you are ripping off every dark comedy that's ever been made. Yeah. Why are you doing this?
Yeah. Totally, dude.
We need some filler. What would Tarantino do? Oh, let's do a sperm bank scene.
Yeah.
And by the way, this movie is carrying aloft the trope of the trailer ain't the movie.
Yeah. Oh, I've never seen the trailer. Tell me about the trailer. What's it like?
Yeah. I watched the trailer.
I watched it first, and it gives you a very different movie that is a dark comedy that's funny and quirky and crazy.
That's how I sold my fiance on watching this movie with me, in which time she demanded a refund. Yeah. The trailer was what got us in. Yeah. The movie is what got her out.
So nobody saw this in theaters, right? None of us.
Not us.
Okay.
I'm sure somebody did.
Yeah, well, I mean, the three of us.
No, I don't think anyone alive saw it in theaters.
But there was they made like the, what, like 17 mil or something, 13 mil back. So, I mean, they, you know.
It's a movie that's
monies.
Money.
That's monies.
Yeah, it's monies. I honestly, I don't know if I ever heard of this film before we had it on our list.
Me either.
When you mentioned it to me, I honestly thought it was like a maybe a martial arts film where somebody goes against a bunch of martial artists with a gun or something like that. Cause it feels like the way of the gun.
Yeah.
And that was intentional. And that's
you could go the way of the sword or you could go the way of the gun.
And that was the failing, in my opinion, of the marketing. They did not market this well. They should have showed us what we were getting. And at least I think it would have been a little bit more acceptance.
Hey, Brian Ebbett.
Maybe.
Yes, sir.
While you were busy listening to 11 straight Def Leppard albums, I studied the gun.
Awesome.
you were studying the gun. What? He studied the gun, he said.
I studied, studied the gun.
Yeah. It's his gun. There are many like it, but this one is his.
Fair enough.
So I thought it was a Western. And that's because I like Westerns, I guess, or something.
It's titled like a Western. It's titled like a Western, and it is filmed like a Western is a Western.
Yeah.
That the genre of this movie is Western.
Yeah, you're right, but it doesn't lean in hard enough. Like that's why I like the one Hell or High Water, because it's modern day, but man, it's a Western. Like there's no question in my mind that's supposed to be a Western.
There's a couple of things about this movie that we talked about the things that just really stood out. And one of the things that really stood out was that low speed car chase.
Yes, thank you.
So low speed that you have to put their feet out the sides and push their
car. That was brilliant.
So brilliant. I thought, wait, have they seen the latest meme of Drake's video where people get out and dance along with Kiki dance? I'm like, man, this is hot right here. This is good. I liked it, but I did like that low speed chase. That was so much fun.
Is Drake that doing, was Drake's doing something on a car? What's the deal?
Oh, you haven't seen the meme?
No,
is that you leave the car running, you get out of the car, run alongside it, and dance alongside it, and then get back in the car.
Okay.
If you do it correctly, everyone cheers you. If you do it incorrectly, you run into a pole.
If you do it incorrectly, the only videos I've ever seen, and I've only seen maybe three, are people doing it incorrectly. And it was on the news telling people, don't let your children do this. It's dumb. The latest craze that will kill your children.
No, there's always one, man. There's always one that's about to kill your kids.
Yeah, it's just ruined everything.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So,
It was definitely top three scenes in the whole film for me. It was so brilliant and so different. The sequence between James Caan and Benicio del Toro in the diner with the coffee that Scott Johnson would never put his lips to. That was absolutely brilliant, because you got a good script and two great actors, but it was not unique in any way, shape, or form. There was nothing unique about it.
Like a few weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and he did it better. However, Del Toro, when he there was a couple of moments where we had the Tarantino-esque thing where there's something inside this package and our character can see it and we're showing great emotion, and that was one of the things when Del Toro went outside with James Caan after the little coffee break and shows him something in his wallet, and the look on Del Toro's face is like, holy crap, what just happened? He has just revealed something major to this character, and I felt like that was a really effective scene. And then he went from being well-relaxed with the character to being very paranoid about the character. And I was like, wow, what just happened?
Yeah.
What did he see?
It was the Kaiser Soze moment, right? Where it's like he just realized who Kaiser Soze was that kind of... Oh crap. All right. Now this just got real. Yeah.
So what you guys are doing is just reminding me about all the potential here. Like there's so much potential.
Potential.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's just kind of wasted.
Even that sniper scene.
Oh, that's good.
Great potential in it, right? And all right, they get out of here, you think they're gone, and then they're picking these guys off. That could have been done so well with better writing, better planning. Mm-hmm.
The actual shooting and the gunplay and everything was really good. Juliette Lewis is standing there and he's shooting on either side of her to keep her there.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. Yeah. And it was very competent, the cinematography.
Yeah.
But the film doesn't have a plan at that point. Right, just here, look at this other great thing. Like these, these previous scenes are here's a great scene, and we don't have an overall goal.
Yeah, as far as sniper scenes go, he did it really well in the Usual Suspects. There's that sniper scene with the bald one everyone hates was fantastic. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite scenes of all ever involving any sort of snipers, which sounds like a weird thing to say. It's very specific, but we know McQuarrie has it in him, to make that amazing, and it just, felt like wasted. A wasted opportunity.
It did feel like wasted. I mean, we had the police show up, and we only had two. Of course, at first you hear the sirens, oh man, they're about to raid this place. Nope, just two guys. Oh, that's not going to be enough. Mm-hmm. That's going to end poorly. And sure enough, Ted Diggs and his partner come flying up in that car. I'm like, there's no way those police would not have guns drawn at a car flying up like that. So that kind of it felt choppy, but it was fun. It was fun.
Overall, can I have another triple alert?
Yeah, you can always have one.
Morally gray. It's not really like this is another movie where everyone's a bad guy, and you're supposed to look at it and go, oh, well, here's this here are these characters who are morally gray, and so you start out the movie and you're like, okay, I'm gonna root for these two guys that clearly are the protagonists of the film. But no, they're not really morally gray. They're killing everybody and anybody however they want. And okay, so I'm going to root for the people who oppose them. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're really bad guys. Like, they're even worse bad guys. Okay, the Mexican cops show up. Can I root for them?
I don't know.
Like, yeah.
The movie is so determined that no one is actually, you know, a good guy. And it's like, that's, I'm sorry, I'm tired.
You worded that really well, because I couldn't think how to describe this. It was maybe my biggest problem with the movie is I never knew who to root for. And I can root for bad guys. I can root for Walter White's in the world. It's not a problem. I can find a way to do it if you're writing it well. But nobody here had redeeming qualities. And one minute you're like, oh, Ryan Phillippe is starting to understand the bigger meaning of life and the baby and this and that. And then you're like, all right, yeah, but you're also kind of a dick. You know,
well, but they
yeah, James Caan is likable.
Yeah.
Right. They preach that from the beginning to the end of the movie. That was the whole point. Is there redemption? Who can you pull for? He even asks us, Ryan Phillippe's character, ask us to ask ourselves that question in the very beginning of the movie and to question it all throughout the movie. I don't feel like I had a very satisfying end, but that was definitely intentional. One of my favorite great characters, though, had to be the gas station attendant, who at first thinking she's gonna totally have to crack down. She's gonna be the one that escalates this to something bad with Del Toro. But Del Toro shows, what did he have, like a boiled egg in his mouth? What was that?
I don't know. It was a banana.
Was it a banana?
Yeah.
And then it just kind of. It gets odd after that.
It's like, she had a weird twitch too, like a weird lip twitch while she was watching the video.
Yeah,
watching Dirty Dancing, and then odd.
But that's the point. Like, the reason morally gray is such a trope is because if you introduce even one character who is just morally good, then we are forced to choose that character to sort of like believe in. And
Dr. Painter was supposed to be that, but was he?
Yeah, he's really not. And that gets all horribly muddied when we find out he's the main bad guy's son. Like,
we haven't even talked about how the main bad guy is Herschel from Walking Dead.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Forgot to mention that. Herschel. He's a much younger
Herschel. Different without the beard.
Yeah, it really does. And he doesn't have that one. I think we ought to. Like, he's not.
He was a lot younger here, right? So, I mean.
Well, younger.
Not a lot, but it seemed like he was a lot younger.
Yeah, he was definitely younger, because this was, what, 2000? 2000, yeah. So he's still kicking it, still got stuff to do. He's always in the news, though, or he was when he was on Walking Dead, because he was always in trouble for drinking and driving or something. There was some deal with him.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, there was some, I'd have to look it up, but he was getting arrested for, like, he'd be in Georgia for being on set or whatever, and would end up with like 3 DUIs over the weekend or something that.
Right. Well, all I got to say is every time I see him, he looks drunk. So, I mean, you know.
Sure. I mean, I like him. I think he's an interesting actor. I didn't really like him in this. I think he came off as just that trope of like, here, I'll play it. Hi, I'm a graying old pervert who's way into making sure I have a kid to take over for my dirty business. Like, it may as well have been Ronnie Cox. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's the old Ronnie Cox role this guy got. And and that's right. I said Ronnie, not Ronnie. Everybody.
Just Ronnie Cox.
Make sure you heard that. Okay. Also, there was a phrase I wanted to throw past you guys that came up in the movie. And I've never heard it before. There's always free cheese in a mousetrap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I like that phrase.
I don't know if I completely get it.
Well, that was gonna be my other. I have a whole list that I didn't use in my greeting of reduction philosophies. Right. Mm-hmm. It's actually that one is really good. Like, it felt like a ripoff. Like, that's from some other movie. He didn't actually make this up. Like it makes sense to me, and I'm surprised that it didn't land.
It just didn't. Wait,
did it make sense to you when Del Toro said it, or when you finally yes. realized what Del Toro said?
It made sense.
What? I'm turned on closed caption.
He enunciated.
It made total sense in the moment. And actually, the only thing that I guessed wrong in that moment was that I figured they would actually start destroying the money just because, you know, they were caught, like there was no getting out. Mm-hmm. But I actually like that line a lot.
I like the line too. What exactly was didn't work for you about that line?
I don't know, it just didn't make sense to me. I thought, well, Wayne, if you're okay, so you're a mouse, of course the cheese in the trap is always it's the problem with it being reductive.
It's just basically the fact that it's, you know, it's it always looks like a good thing until you get to it and it's a trap.
I'm just dancing when it comes to that saying, then, because
I think you were probably trying. You thought there was going to be something deeper than that, and it's not.
I did expect something deeper.
Face value.
Yeah, it sounds like I.
What? What? Was what drug dealer.
The first taste is always free, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. The thing that did interest me about that scene was the fact that Ryan Phillippe's character.
I love that you're forced to say it every time.
He went straight for the money, where Del Toro was more interested in protecting his friend. That had more value.
Well, was it more like, you know, like, why are you doing that? I'm trying to protect you. Or was it a, you go get the money, I'll cover you kind of
there
thing?
There was Ryan only, he only came out with one bag of money.
Well, barely, it didn't even come out with that one.
Get your own money, butthole.
It is a, you know, it does lend credence to the fact that these guys are, they've been working together so long, they know how to clear an area. Like, I stand here and hold the gun while you move into the next spot, and then... And you hold the gun while I move in the next spot and kind of do this. I think that part with the kidnapping scene was really well done. Them going down the hall with Tay Diggs and Nikki Cat holding the guns on him.
Yeah.
I can't figure that one out.
So instead of the sperm bank scene, I could have used a scene where we find out, they've been training out in the desert. Like they've been working all this out.
Right.
Because that could have been really cool.
Yeah. I mean, the main message here, guys at home, is that it just feels uneven. That's my big takeaway, is it's uneven. There's moments you're like, okay, I'm getting into this, and then they just break it with some bad choice about pacing or something.
The other reductionist philosophy that I caught but didn't want to use in my greeting was when James Caan says, the only thing you can guess about a broken down old man is that he is a survivor. Right. I love the line, but it's the movie telling me, the viewer, to give it a lot more credit than it deserves. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to come away from hearing that going, oh wow, he's seen some things. He's a badass. Mm-hmm. You know what? Rather than showing me anything to portray that, I just have to believe it on his word.
Yeah,
old man strength.
I like old guy mobster, not mobster, but you know, old guy hitman storyline type stuff. That's the thing I dig on. Right. And James Caan's your guy. Like, sure. Should probably have him in here, but there's just a lot of wasted stuff. And I know we talked about it earlier, but I don't know why Jeffrey Lewis wasn't the dad. Just make him the dad, because he actually looks like her. Like,
maybe I think he's
because he is,
because Khan has got more screen presence, you know,
he's got more stiff neck.
He does. The first thing you see when he's bailing the two bodyguards out, I feel like, oh, is he about to get one of those whiplash collars around his neck? His head is moving with his shoulders. And
I never really noticed it, but the more I started thinking about it, I'm like, I remember him having a stiff neck a long time. Did he have like some fusion? Did he have some of his spine fused or something? And I really couldn't find anything on his
It might just be old. Who knows?
So maybe, but far back as I can remember, it always seems like Khan he's always kind of got like his shoulders are kind of tight, close in, and he's kind of always stiff.
Well, having just seen Godfather, you're right, he's actually pretty stiff in that, now that I think about it. There's nothing kind of guy.
And then the character, this main bad guy, Mr. Chittick, I don't know what his first name is, he is really, he really has some interesting things to say. Almost so far better than the portrayal of the actual character that I'm like, oh, can we hear some more from that guy?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Like, yeah. He says he'd never ask you to trust him because that's the cry of a guilty soul. I'm like, ooh, tell me more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? Unfortunately, they, again, a wasted thing because he just became kind of Snidely Whiplash in the end.
He's right. I mean, he's a very two-dimensional, just mob boss character.
Mm-hmm. But there's a moment where he says, a woman needs security like a man needs approval. And I realize, oh, I don't agree with that, by the way, but I think there's an interesting thing where I'm like, oh, the screenwriter is speaking to me through this character. Mm-hmm. And then we're just like, okay, and now he's just back at home while the movie happens.
Yeah. 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 I feel like I never got any real genuine resolution.
And you're not a Walking Dead watcher, right, Randy?
Correct. I famously announced when Walking Dead started that I was already oversteeped. I had been soaking in zombie things too much already. And so I'm waiting for it to end, and it's been going on for about 25 years now, so I may just have to I'm waiting for it to end before I just watch it all.
Well, since somebody major's leaving, and I don't want to say who. Don't you feel like, Brian, Ibbot, that spells the near, it's gotta be getting close.
The end of the show?
It's gotta be. Right?
When did they go off script from the comic? How long has that been?
Well, they've always kind of, if you imagine the comic as being this kind of horizontal line, they do this thing that kind of looks like a graph of, well, the quality of the way of the gun, where sometimes it goes up above that line, sometimes it goes below that line, sometimes it goes. So they're taking this meandering path that kind of sometimes joins back with the main path.
Right.
And even still with the end of the last season, it was still doing that. Like it's with the Negan stuff, it was kind of following that line. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm not caught up on the comics. That right now, the TV show has caught up to as far as I've read the comics.
Same. So, I got to issue 100 and I haven't read beyond that, and that's right when you get to Negan, so I'm the same. I have no idea where they're at, and I haven't actually watched the last season or this season of the show. It feels like it's a little long in the tooth, and if you ever do just binge the thing, I think that's great, because look, there's some really good stuff in there.
Let me tell you what you don't want to do. You don't want to keep waiting until it's 2018 and you never saw a single episode of The Sopranos.
That's true.
That's what I did.
That's
true. I said, I'll wait just a little longer. I'll wait for the DVDs to come out and I'll catch up.
And now where are you at? See?
It's impossible for me to watch The Sopranos now because it makes absolutely zero sense.
No,
I'm like,
why do
people like this?
I disagree. You should watch The Sopranos. It's awesome.
Yeah,
the show is amazing.
It still holds up. It's still very good.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to say, like, so many of like the top 10 TV series of all time,
right?
You have to watch a lot of it before you start to really get like The Wire.
Yeah,
if
Wire's
you haven't
a hard
The
start.
Wire,
it's a hard start.
Listen to me. Yeah. Watch a good 20 episodes before you give up on it. It gets really good, but it has a lot to tell you, and it takes a while to tell it all.
Slow burn on that one, for sure.
Yeah. Anyway,
I stopped before the 20, and that's there you go. That's why.
Most people, like, three or four episodes, and they're not hooked. They're done. And these great television shows, they have a hard time giving you all the story you need to hold on.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously exceptions, right? Like Game of Thrones is amazing from the very first episode.
Yeah, and they're not overstaying their welcome. I think that having it end soon is the right thing for that show. I know they're going to do spinoffs and stuff, and so you could argue, well, that is staying over its welcome. But the main arc and the main characters, being done this seat. Well, when does this next one start? Is it not till January?
In like March year? Or April.
Oh, jeez, yeah. I hate that. Anyway,
yeah.
But that's what you want. Leave us wanting, right? Like, leave us wanting more.
Mm-hmm. Here's the deal, folks. Game of Thrones is coming next year, and if you haven't caught up, you have time. You're gonna have to get on it because there's like a lot of episodes for you to watch, and they're long. But get on it now. Like, it's gonna be an event every episode next year. It's gonna be an event like very few television shows have ever risen to.
Oh, it's gonna be huge.
And you don't want to be left out.
No, don't be that guy.
Don't be the left out guy.
Be cooler than that guy. That guy is not very cool. All right. Shall
he only
we do,
has one hand. Don't should, be that guy.
Shall we do some clips here? I got some clips.
Yeah, Clippy, you got yeah. clips? We're yeah. going to do a clip.
Clippy. I think it's pronounced Clippy.
Oh, Clippy.
Yeah, Clippy.
Okay,
Clippy.
I've got a personal assistant to help me if I have any questions about Microsoft Word. And his name is Clippy.
Ryan Clippy.
There are not Clippily. Clippily.
You can't do it. You can't do it.
There aren't a ton because, again, I don't know that the dialogue's that great in this movie, so I didn't do a ton, but I got some. So here's one.
I'm going to whip you silly.
I just like that.
I'm glad. I'm bummed you didn't put the second half, but I'm kind of glad you didn't.
Yeah, it's probably good that I didn't.
Because I don't understand. You're going to, the second half is I'm going to F you stupid. I'm going to whip you silly and F you stupid.
Yeah, which makes
yeah
either no sense so or you're a psycho.
You're going to beat me and then have violent sex with me?
Yeah, neither option works for me. I don't like either option.
Yeah, what grossed me out the most?
That guy. A quick note too, it's a little bit misleading. If you watch the first scene, which is that yelling match outside in the parking lot, you think what you're going to get is one of the most foul-mouthed movies you've ever seen, and you don't. It's kind of over at that point. Like
it kind of is. Yeah. I mean, they switch from F-bombs to gore, but
they just stop swearing. They stop, you know, that whole thing at the beginning with Sarah Silverman is not emblematic of the rest of the film. It's really weird.
Yeah, anyway. Did she put more F-bombs in the sentence than Steve Martin did in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
Oh man, I don't know, but I love that scene in Planes, Trains.
Yeah,
it's best scene in the history of film. All right, here's a bad guy laugh, it's the Walking Dead guy. So here's Herschel laughing. He just goes on, dude. Like, come on, man. Take a
remember, I'm the bad guy.
Yeah, look at me.
In case there was any doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, like, sometimes you wonder, like, was that like off script and he just started doing it and they just liked it?
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder about that. That's
give us a good 2 or 3 minutes of laughing. We'll use maybe 10 seconds of it. Yeah. I think we're going to use the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to use it all, Christopher McQuarrie. Join Scientology.
Hey, Chris, that was really good awkward laughing. it was really good, dude.
Keep the whole thing.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, I'll see you later at the shelter.
Yeah, see you at the shelter. See you at the Xenu meeting. All right, I hate his voice, and here's a piece of it.
We're not talking about how long you're going to live, hon. We're talking about how slow you're going to die.
Yeah, see? Listen here,
hun. Not talking.
I hate the word hun. I don't like it either.
Hey, hun. Oh, I don't like it.
No, that's only diner ladies should ever say that.
Yeah.
Did you want me to refill your coffee, hun?
Yes.
No, I love that.
Yeah.
That's the only place it should be used.
I know it's an act. At least I hope it's an act. I really hope it's an act. But if I'm in a diner and I get those familiar terms thrown at me, it makes me really feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't mind if somebody goes, hun, can I fill up your coffee, hun? Like, it's cute. I don't have a problem with that. It's just a dude named Philippi saying it.
Yeah.
Where I draw the line, man.
And, hey, hon. Yeah. You're coming with us.
See? Mirror. I'm being a mobster man. See? Mirror. All right. There's that file. How about this one? Bacon's. Oh, no. This is something else. Del Toro talking.
What? You're going to meet me in Mexico with the money. She'll be with my partner, and even I won't know where until he calls. You'll come alone. You'll come equipped to induce labor. Not she dies. You'll follow, she dies. If I don't answer the phone when my partner calls, she dies. It's on your head now, Doc. The more careful you are with her life, the less I have to worry. Got me? That baby's coming out, understand?
I understand.
Okay, so I would argue it's the most verbose he is in any movie. I've never heard him enunciate as much as he's doing here, which is interesting, because you just don't get that from
him. Here's the thing. You don't know at that point that he's talking to the baby's father, who is in love with the baby's mother. You don't know that yet. And that could have been already demonstrated. Like, when she goes to see him, why would she go to see him, by the way? Why would he be her obstetrician? That's creepy. But when she goes to see the doctor earlier in the movie, you get the feeling like the doctor freaking hates her. It's not at all portrayed that he actually, you know, has a huge stake in this game.
Does he hate her because she's giving their child away to his father?
Like, I'm just saying. Yeah, sure, I get that. I'm just saying, like, the movie hasn't given you the understanding you need at this point to get how bad this plan is. The plan is going to go so... He's literally telling the worst person to tell.
Yeah. It's... Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Whatever. You know what? Quick poll. Favorite Del Toro movie. I got a hand down one, but I want to hear everyone else's.
Well, I mean, Usual Suspects.
Put your hands down.
All right,
are we taking Usual Suspects out of contention? Because
no, you can count it.
Anybody saying not saying Usual Suspects is lying.
No, I'm not. Then you're going to call me a liar.
I mean, I have a Del Toro movie that I like better than the Usual Suspects.
Yeah, but his performance we're talking about. So what do you pick there, Dunaway?
My favorite is Sicario.
Oh, you took mine, you bastard. I love that.
I really have enjoyed that. And I'm a little disappointed that the follow-up film was not by the same director because, man.
Yeah, but he's busy making Dune, so you should be happy about that.
I am happy about that, but I wish they had just had to put the Sicario sequel, which they didn't need, on hold until he got done.
Well, the problem is
doubt,
actually no. Hold on.
Day of Soldado is
yeah. Sicario 2 was being filmed at the exact same time as he was doing the Blade Runner deal. Right, like he is beyond that Villeneuve guy is out of there, man. He is on to big, huge stuff now. There's no stopping that dude, and I am thrilled about it. I agree with you though. It would have been nice if he'd have been around, but I heard it's okay. It's not bad.
I heard it's okay too. It looked good. There was some scenes I saw the trailer. It looked really good. I just a little bit.
But that Sicario, that first Sicario movie.
Ooh, that first one's good.
So
that was good stuff.
Yeah, that was my pick. That was my pick as well. Randy, do you have a, what do you like?
Since you have already talked about like two of his best movies, I actually want to point out that he keeps playing bit roles in Guardians of the Galaxy and Star Wars movies.
Oh, right.
And I freaking love it.
Collector.
Yeah.
I love that Guardians of the Galaxy / Infinity War cameos. And I love the role he played in The Last Jedi. I thought I guess that he can't carry a film anymore, and so I want him in a tiny little bit or piece. And that's perfect, man. I can't take my eyes off that guy when watching The Last Jedi.
No, you can't do it. I can't take my eye off him no matter what he's doing. He's just really magnetic guy. I love Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and his weird character. And I shouldn't say I love it. That movie's weird, but I like his role in it.
Love it. Love it.
I like him in everything except that Wolfman movie they made. That was real bad. I don't know if anyone saw
that. How about Sin City? You like him in that?
Sure, I guess.
Sure, why not, Ryan?
First Sin City. Second one's a little rough. First one's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jackie Boy.
It's not the worst thing ever. All right. Here's
Dan to fall asleep in front of.
Yeah, exactly. Here is a universal truth that we just like to remind you all of. Here you go.
I like bacon.
It's from a gas station.
It's still good.
That, my friends, was the most unbelievable scene in the film. I got to look at that gas station sandwich. In no way did that come from a gas station.
Yeah.
That came from Kraft Services.
Yeah.
That sandwich was not cut into triangles and wrapped in some kind of weird saran wrap and was not brown.
Yeah.
So.
Cut into triangles is the deal.
Yeah. I've had some not pretty good sandwiches from a gas station, but they were all a kind of behind the counter deli style thing they would do there. So it doesn't really count. The stuff you're talking about should be what we're discussing here, which is that garbage plastic.
Where they cut them in half and then they put it on display. Yeah. Look at our meats.
Yeah, it's bad. It's a bad time for everybody involved. All right, here's Herschel talking.
I'm sorry I've gotten you involved in this part of my life. I know it isn't your way of thinking, and I'm grateful for that. I never wanted you to be that way. But don't be naive. She understood who she was dealing with. She understood the situation. It's a simple fact of life that anyone who would do business with a man like me can't be trusted.
Dang, dude.
That's deep.
It's pretty deep.
So deep, put his butt to sleep.
And then I'll go back to Moobler.
Right, Moo-ha-ha.
We also have like a lot of hand waving.
Yeah.
A lot of hand waving.
Oh, yeah. You know, we never actually saw him really do anything. He threatened a lot, and people talked about his threatening and menacing, but wasn't really.
When you have a guy like that, menacing. You need to have it end with a grenade in his pants or something. Something has to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm thinking, Lance.
You mean like you got one guy that got shot in the crotch?
Yeah.
By Del Toro?
Yeah.
Like that.
Somebody needs to get, something needs to happen to him.
That poor old man survivor made it through all the things he had seen, then.
What happened? What happened to him in the end? Now I forgot what happened to Herschel. What happened? Did he die?
Which one?
One of the guys running around the hotel with a gun, wasn't he?
And no, Herschel. Herschel was back home getting his wife pregnant.
That's right, and she finds out I'm pregnant.
Oh,
that's
so he missed.
Yeah, he's sitting there. Yeah, he's sitting there in the chair in front. That's right.
That was a stupid ending. It was stupid.
Yeah.
Oh my lord, I want to die.
I know, we'll have a twist.
Right. I really hate that.
She's the only person that had any character development because she refused to put her body through childbirth until she lost the child that was in Juliette Lewis's body. And then, after seeing the videotape, she went through with being a mother.
Yeah, even though, you know, I guess. I thought it was because she couldn't have kids, and now suddenly she can.
She didn't want to have kids.
Right. Oh. They were too rich for her to have to go through that.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, all right.
We were told earlier.
I like her in things. Other stuff I've seen her in. I think she's good. The blonde.
Yeah,
I forgot her name.
Look back to see what. I don't remember Kristen Lemon or Lemon. I don't remember. I've seen other things she's been in, but I don't remember her in them.
Do you remember? She was in. Wasn't she in The
Chronicles
Killing?
Of Riddick?
She was in The Killing. Wasn't she the TV show The Killing?
She was in The Killing. Who was she in The Killing?
She was the lawyer that was kind of getting it on with. Who was she getting it
Kinnaman?
On with?
Joel Kinnaman?
I'm sorry, not a lawyer. She was part of the campaign. She ran the first two seasons, helped run the campaign for the guy that you thought killed the girl but didn't in the end, and they get put in a wheelchair because somebody shot him. Remember that? I don't know.
Now I know since in watching The Killing. Jeez.
I did watch that like six or seven years ago.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, made the mistake of watching that as it aired. Yeah. Way better as a binge show for sure.
Oh,
she was on an episode of Castle. By the way, I'm kind of looking forward to the new series on ABC this fall that's going to bring back Nathan Fillion time also as a police officer in The Rookie.
What? Really?
I hadn't heard about this.
Yeah. I hadn't either until I saw a trailer for it the other night.
That sounds great. Yeah, I'm in.
She definitely doesn't have the best IMDb photo, but not the worst for this movie. Not by far.
That would
be Heidi Van Leer, who played the gas station clerk. Her IMDb photo looks exactly like she went up to a booth that was labeled "Take your IMDb photo here," and then she was like, "Oh, what, this button?" And it only gives you one try.
Yeah,
nice.
At a gas station, by the way. That's probably where it's done.
I like it.
Yeah.
At least she didn't get titled "sloppy prostitute."
Who got titled that?
Wow, Irene Santiago. I guess she must have been the one that Juliette Lewis popped in on, who was robbing that man, and then she got turned away. Sloppy prostitute.
That's a terrible name. You don't want to. You do not want to be called a sloppy prostitute.
No,
that's awesome. Well done.
Egg.
Final clip. Is it? Nope. Two more. Here's one.
If I want to hit her, I hit her. If I want to miss, I miss.
That part was all right. It's fine. And then this line, which I'll just use for lots of things from here on out.
Come get in the car right now!
All right, Philippi, I'm getting in the car. Let's do it right now. Hey, look at this! It's the Film Sack Checklist. Wants to be another Pulp Fiction? Yes. Or check. Sorry. Better than most Pulp Fiction wannabes? Check. That's not saying much? Check.
I don't know. I think
name
if you put
one.
This up against like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, or
I don't know if I'd call those Pulp Fiction-y.
Well, what about Wise Guys, Lucky Number 11?
That's a terrible movie. That's a terrible movie. That's not a good movie.
What's the one with Jeremy Piven that was really good?
Seven Bags.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah. I actually enjoyed that one. He was the bad guy, right? He was the slimy
duffel
guy.
Duffel bags
he
was and the slimy guy. A bag of right. duffel bags. Is that it?
No, it wasn't Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag.
No, it was Smoking Aces. Was it Smoking Aces?
Smoking Aces.
Smoking Aces. Yes,
that was a good, that's a good Pulp Fiction wannabe.
I enjoyed Smoking Aces. That was pretty darn
good. That one's all right. I'll give you that one. But that's why I said most. Better than most Pulp Fiction wannabes.
This is worse than most.
Well, that's like why the... my third thing was that's not saying much. Check.
See? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right.
Yeah. See,
I feel like the worst Pulp Fiction wannabes are like Kill Bill and Jackie Brown and
really,
I like Jackie Brown with his own thing. I enjoyed it.
I like Jackie Brown a lot. There's nothing wrong with Jackie Brown. No one likes Jackie. Someone doesn't like Jackie Brown.
I like Jackie Brown a lot.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm blaming Tarantino for trying to recapture.
Right. But see, I didn't feel like that was Pulp Fiction. I felt like that was an homage to 70s films of the type. But I know what you mean.
Yeah. But I mean, I mean, the Pulp Fiction, like, what is Pulp Fiction without Reservoir Dogs? And what is, you know, what is Hateful Eight without the kinds of things Inglourious Tarantino Bastards. Does. Yeah, exactly. It's like he does pull from himself. He pulls himself off a lot. What am I saying?
Yes, he does. Pulls right in front of you. Right in front of you.
Yeah, right in front of me. Well, it's only if you have good feet. You have to have good feet. If you have good feet, you're in.
Hold up. Wait. This just in. The Roger Corman 4 film collection. Somebody just sent me a link to this for $15.
What?
Future Film Sack.
Which
Star Crash, which
movie do you get?
Star Crash, we've already seen. Drat. Battle Beyond the Stars. Love that film. That was the one that was the TV film, correct? I believe so. Rock and Roll High School. Never saw that one. Mm, and
The Ramones.
Piranha, the first one. That's right. Not that other one we just saw.
Oh, I would watch Piranha.
Oh, really? But none of the... God, what's the one with the race? Death Race. None of the Death Race films?
Nope.
Really?
Wasn't there a race movie with something death?
Wasn't there a race movie with things that implied death?
Nice pullback.
I'm surprised none of those were in there.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe they're saving that for the Death Race collection, which will also be $15.99.
Star Trek connections this week. We only have one. Sarah Silverman. She played Raving Bitch in Voyager. She was played Rainn Robinson in the episode Future's End and Future's End Part 2, as alluded to by Randy earlier. I don't remember her in that, and I've seen all of Voyager, so I probably should go back and check it out. How was she in that? Do you have anyone have a memory of how?
No.
I'm hoping she was angry.
Yeah,
I watched Voyager all the way through, like. I watched Voyager all the way through like 5 years ago, and I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Oh, you watched it all? I need to do that. I feel like I've missed a chance to just get back into my Star Trek vibe lately. I just haven't. Yeah. Well, is it like we talked about earlier? There's a ton of TV right now, and that's all vying for our attention.
There's a lot of great stuff to watch on TV. So,
soundtrack great. I'd give you a G for great. I think it's the best thing in the movie.
Agreed.
Real cool stuff, and just smart. Interesting.
Kramer guy.
Yeah, Kramer.
You did good.
Now it's time for the Twitter post. Sum it up in 280 characters, if you please. Let's start with Randy.
The Way of the Gun. A highly contentious pregnancy. A woman secretly making out with Taye Diggs, but right there where anyone can walk in and see them. Men popping off everywhere. Something, something. Saturday night, Ibbitt's house.
Nice. I'm 100% fine if every ending ends up that way. You never have to not do that. I think it's always.
I'm all right with it too.
Yeah. I guess we should ask. Of that joke. We should always ask the Ibbitt if he's okay with it. But yes, I like it. It's good. next up, we have, as is tradition, Brian Dunaway.
Ah, The Way of the Gun. Like, almost forgetting, you punched Sarah Silverman in the face almost 2 hours ago. You're going to hell, Ryan Phillippe. Adjudication.
Flippy Pippy.
Adjudication.
Oh, yeah. Dude, no clips with adjudication in it.
I know. And they said it like 1 million times.
It was the movie tagline. Yeah.
It was such a fun buildup, too, because at first it was like adjudication. And then they said it again like about 5 minutes later. And then all of a sudden it was just a volley of adjudications. And I was like, okay, stop it.
Well, I failed. I failed in my clips gathering.
Shame,
job.
Shame.
Finally, bringing up the ream. Brian Ibbitt.
Yes,
bringing up the ream.
You're ready for the ream.
Oh yeah.
The Way of the Gun. This movie is all mousetrap and no free cheese.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That was pretty good. Nicely done. All right. Let's see. Where are we now? Oh, oh my gosh. This just handed to me. Oh, that's the wrong one. Shit.
Wow, that hurt.
Just handed to me on this little card. These were titles that almost happened. It was almost called The Day of the Bum or The Tray of the Chum. I didn't use any of the ones from our Slack conversation because I didn't feel like it was right to do that. But we had a little fun with rhyming words in there. So a little behind the scenes for everybody.
A little punny, little punniness. A
couple of quick emails from listeners who sent them into filmsack@gmail.com. We got one from Jeff May. And Jeff, you may have your email read right now. The subject is This Week in FilmSack from 6 years ago. Hey, FilmSack crew, I thought it would take us down a trip to memory lane. So here's a little bit of a test for us. Do you know what film you sacked 6 years ago this week? But this would have been last week. To give you a hint, here's a clip of Randy Vanilla Ice Jordan describing it for you. Okay? So hold on a second. Oh, I thought I had this copied out. Let me do this real fast. Okay, there we go. Play. Hitting play.
Aloha, Scott, Brian. This movie made me laugh and it had me crying. Hammy Will Smith, stupid Kevin Kline. A script that got worse line after line. For the sake of nothing, dumb steampunk. Wasn't even saved by Salma Hayek's junk. Every little bit of this theme was whack. I guess it's perfect for FilmSack. In the Wild Wild West.
Oh, I wonder.
Oh, wow. So there's the title right there.
I wish he'd cut the clip off after like 2 seconds so we could actually wonder what it was.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what, though? So that's crazy. Chick in the Bucket origin story right there.
Right, yeah. Yes, the very origin of Chick in the Bucket.
6 years, dude?
6 years ago.
What?
That Chick in the Bucket is 6 years old today.
That's insane. That's insane.
She's never been forgotten.
How is that
Pour one out of the bucket today.
How is that real at all? That blows my mind. All right. Well, fair enough. Let's see. One more email. This came to us from Gilgrim, who says, was trying to work while listening to the latest episode. Slippery Swan, the comment Slippery Swan killed me. Had to stop the episode. It's not good for a tattooist to tattoo you while convulsing uncontrollably from laughter from his favorite podcast, Gilgrim.
No, this is true. Yeah.
I don't remember the Slippery Swan comment,
Please
though.
Please take a picture, though. I would like to see the tattoo results of post-FilmSack.
Yeah, but do you guys know what the swan reference was? I don't know what it is.
Well, it was Hot Fuzz. He's running around chasing that swan.
Oh, right.
That damn Slippery Swan.
Oh, I'm happy to hear we almost made him screw up somebody's armor.
Jeez, right? Yeah. like a needle scratching a record is all I can visualize with that.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you for the emails, guys. If you want to send your emails in, you can do it simply and easily at filmsack@gmail.com or, go to the website, filmsack.com, and hit the contact link, and boom, you're in. That's what these two guys did, and you can do the same.
Boom, you're in.
Our next movie is a little bit of a lighter fare and involves a CGI dog. Randy, do the honors.
Backy back. We're on Film Sack with the Scooby-Doo next week.
Yeah?
Exactly. Right. The original, the first movie, the only one that needed to be made. I actually, I remember seeing this movie when it was in theaters, but I remember nothing.
So I forgot there was a sequel. Totally forgot there was a sequel. How is that sequel? Probably terrible. It's probably the worst thing ever. Right?
Not as good, but tolerable.
Only Brian Dunaway knows.
Mm.
Tolerable, not as good.
Tolerable, yeah. Why do you always, because you own these things or something, right? You own these movies?
Of course, why would you not own them?
I can think of about a trillion things I'd rather own than that, if I'm being honest with you.
But what would they be?
They would be...
See, you don't own them. You're wasting your time. You should totally get the Scooby-Doo double pack.
The important thing is it would not be Scooby-Doo. Whatever it is I would own, it wouldn't be that. Okay. No judgment. You do you, man. You go to Walmart. You dig through that dollar bin. You do what you got to do.
Right? I don't dig through the dollar bin.
Have you already ordered
anymore.
Your Roger Corman 4-pack?
It is in my cart. I'm afraid to hit purchase just yet. But it's in my cart.
You should do it.
And I don't dig through the Walmart thing anymore. I just, if something's on top, it's mine. It's mine.
And you gotta have rules. I tease, of course, because generally you and I have a lot of shared interests in movies, especially in the horror genre. I have no problem with it. In fact, you bring to the show a little some gravitas because we're all like, Scooby-Doo, did I even see that? And you're like, I've seen it 50 times.
Anti-gravitas. He brings...
Anti-gravitas, I like that.
He brings some helium to the... No, I don't know
is
what
that
it
what
is.
The opposite of
helios? Yes,
I don't know what the opposite is. I've never had to think about it before. Well, anyway.
But I did just find that they have the, they got the four film Scooby-Doo fave pack for only, $9.96. If you don't mind getting it all with. Yeah, yeah,
what's the films, other two? What's getting... the other two movies? Are they animated?
There were
or
a few that went to cart. Yeah, there, no, there's a few that actually I believe they did on the Cartoon Network, if I'm not mistaken. They used to have a movie, Cartoon Network did during the day on Saturdays, and I think that's when these may have been spawned. Not 100% sure on that, but there are the first two from the official series, and then two more.
Yeah, but are they live action or are they?
Oh, they're live action. Yeah, they're
I'm
live.
I'm guessing
action.
No Sarah Michelle Gellar or Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah,
or,
yeah, right, right. Yeah,
yeah.
Just the first two.
Those two are too busy making babies.
Too busy. And if you don't mind getting some with some goober jelly on it, you can order it used for $5.95.
Goober jelly.
Ew. I don't.
What gross got out the most?
I don't know what's happening now. This is all terrible. All right. Jelly. Well, that's going to do it for FilmSack, everybody. We hope you've enjoyed the episode. I know I have, and I suspect we all have. We'll be back next week with a brand new show, Scooby-Doo. That's what it is. Get down there. Oh, is it Netflix? I assume so, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
FilmSack.com is our website. As always, you can leave us emails, FilmSack@gmail.com. And on Twitter, we're at FilmSack. And by the way, if you're trying to follow all of us, you can do that on our website as well. FilmSack.com has a link to everybody's Twitter account. You can find archives of the show. You can leave comments on this episode. All kinds of fun stuff there. That's FilmSack.com. And leave us a review wherever. Leave us review. Leave us a review wherever
leave
you
us
get
review.
Your... leave us review. Go to internet. Leave now. Us review. That's gonna do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Adjudicate.
We'll see you next time.
Move.
Moving.
Move.
Moving.
Moving. Moving. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Come get in the car right now!
Okay, gosh dang
it. Get in the car right now! Gee.